Of course, we are inside of our Town Fair Tire Studio. Our friends at Town Fair remind you that you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody is going to get me to think that this is going to resolve itself anytime soon. So there's a lot of item with the Yankees, a lot of items at play here, and it's been a lot of these same regurgitations over the years. Cashman this, analytics that, Boone this, you know, lack of whatever that. There's the baseball-driven items, and, you know, we've hit them over and over. But I'm just going to simplify it because I think it was more on display this weekend than I really maybe even thought. Where's the heart of the Yankees? Where's the soul? You know, where's the grit? Where's the grind? There's 32 games to go, all right? And there's going to be a lot of fluctuation. And they're going to make the playoffs, right? It's going to be a lot of fluctuations, probably starting tonight, you know. They'll win 2 out of 3 against the Nats, maybe sweep them. In 3 games, they'll probably hit, let's see, average 3.5 or so per, 3, 6, 9, 10. You know, I'd go for the 3-game series, over-under, 10.5, 11, 12 home runs. They'll be right there. You know, then they'll play the White Sox, 3 in Chicago. They'll smack them, probably win 3 times. So they're going to stabilize their season. It's not about that. It's about the difference, just optically, what the Yankees look like when they play a team that is at a franchise, and now franchises, no longer afraid of them. Like Toronto, it's like, whatever, man. We're fast. We're tough. You know, we're scrappy. Let's play ball. Toronto's owned them. The Red Sox, tough, scrappy, pretty good. Better in certain spots, weaker in certain spots, but all in all, pretty good. Not afraid of them. Punk them. So Thursday was one type of loss. Friday was another. Saturday was disgraceful. You know, and Saturday, I didn't even have a chance to, not that I really would have wanted to do this, because the way Thursday and Friday went, like, I'm not that guy. So we're at Sal's on Saturday. Got there around 1:30-ish. Put on the Yankee game. We're in the pool. And, you know, then obviously we're there for the start of the Met game as well. But after the Yankee game, we put on a Little League. Want to check out Fairfield. Great run by the kids from Connecticut. Really proud of them as well. They didn't win that game, but awesome. And, like, they get destroyed. And I'm sitting there, you know, Sal's a Mets guy. You know, even though we were objective, of course, but, and Hoff's a Mets guy. And, like, even if they would have won 12-1, I'm still not getting up there squawking, because that's really not me. But also because of the way they look Thursday and Friday. But instead, after Thursday and Friday, like, frustrating, close losses, they get absolutely mopped on Saturday. So I'm sorry, but I'm way past the point of a bunch of home runs changing my perspective on what this team is. It's less about baseball, and I think it's more about makeup at this point. I just don't like the team's makeup. I don't see any resistance or aversion to losing, and that is just unacceptable, because that has never been the Yankees. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to you. That's the number, obviously. Let me get Sal in Brooklyn. Sal, BT and Sal, what's going on, man?
BT, what's going on, my good man? How you feeling?
I'm good. What's happening, Sal? It's been a while. You good?
I'm good, thank you. Good. You had a caller previously say he thinks the Yankees are better than Boston. As individuals, maybe, but the thing is, it's a team. And here's the construct of the team that upsets me, because, you know, I've been following them since the late 60s, 70s. Mm-hmm. So we've been through the gamut, whatever. We have the blueprint. But here's the deal. Cashman, now, for next year, we have $32 million tied up in third base, because we got this McMahon for 2 years at $17 million, and you still got to pay DJ. So $32 million is tied up. Still have no shortstop. Jazz is not a real ball player. He plays baseball, but he's not a ball player.
Mm-hmm.
You got none at first base. You're going to bring Bellinger back, maybe to play him at first, or what do you do with Judge? You didn't develop Dominguez where you were supposed to this year. You got Ben Rice. Granted, he's hitting bombs, but he's a 240 hitter. He's expendable. If you could get something for him, go get it.
Hold on. Now I got to interrupt. Hold on, Sal.
Go ahead.
You keep going. Go ahead. You couldn't be more wrong on Ben Rice. Ben Rice is going to be Ben Rice. Ben Rice. Ben Rice is where we can't get nuts here. Ben Rice is going to be the three hitter for the Yankees for, I believe, a while. Ben Rice is going to be great as a hitter. Keep going.
I think you're overrating him a little bit.
I think you're woefully underrating him. You're lost when it comes to Ben Rice. Stud.
No, okay. So you got Ben Rice. At least I'm saying you could get rid of him and get something back. They have nobody on this team who knows they're here for 5 or 6 years that plays with grit and tenacity, man. It's not that same
thing.
Well,
that part I agree with.
Toronto always played us hard, and we always went there. They threw a jab, we threw a punch.
Yeah.
Boston would throw a jab, we throw a jab back. We went in there to destroy Baltimore. It's just, this falls on Cashman, brother. When you keep, you got Rosario and Caballero, you got two of the same players to play a position that we're weak at. You see what I'm saying? He's just building up bodies. Just to sit there, and nobody really has.
But Sal, you got to understand this, Sal. And thanks for the call. And I'm with you on basically everything. Said the Ben Rice stuff is you're off on that. Ben Rice is going to be a star as a hitter. Period. But the reason why I think you see so many of these mistakes, and I don't think Rosario's a mistake, like maybe like you do, and I don't think Caballero's a mistake. I love them. Love them both. But like the reason why they seem to do this every year is because there's been many mistakes made before they leave camp or spring training. And like they start the season, payroll's high, you got Judge, you always have a stud pitcher, whether it's Cole or this year with Freed. I'm talking about going into the season, right? So there's enough for all of us to say, and you know, division's been down historically, American League a little weaker than the NL, reasons to get behind. Yanks are going to be good. Yanks are going to win 90-something. Although I wasn't as convinced this year, and I told you, and when Sal and I did this, I'm like, I don't know if they're going to win the division. I've said that a lot. This goes back to February and March. Check it out. I'm not just saying that now. And I don't think they're going to win the division. They will be a playoff team, but they're not winning the division. And I also never glossed over Toronto when some of you did, just because they don't have a recent history of winning. Toronto plays a better brand of baseball than the Yankees, and I identified that immediately when I watched them on the same field. So a lot of the things I've said, there has been consistency there. But you also see these mid-season acquisitions, and then it's like, well, okay, it's Rosario can hit lefties, and Caballero can lead the league in steals like he is and play a little short, a little second, a little right. I get it. A little left if he had to with a pinch, a little third. But Can they play consistently? And the answer is no. It's just too fragmented. Like, they know they need to make moves. And to their credit, they do. At least I'll give Cashman that credit. I'd like to see this happen before the season on a higher level. Like, I don't know, somebody like Bregman. But they bring in these solutions, what they perceive to be solutions midseason. But there's so many bodies. There's only so many slots. And it really becomes untenable in terms of getting good baseball players like Caballero is. He is a baseball player. But there's really not a ton of room for him. So, yeah, it's just a lot wrong. And by the way, Ben Rice, geek it up for a little bit here, very little bit. His expected slugging percentage is in the 98th percentile. His average exit velo, 98th percentile. His barrel rate, 95%. His hard hit rate, 98%. Sweet spot, bat speed, squared up, chase, all massively above. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Like, if you don't think that, you can tell me Ben Rice might not be a good catcher, which I don't really agree with. You can tell me you don't love him at first base, which I do agree with. There is nobody, and there is no way anybody is telling me that Ben Rice can't rake. Because that guy can swing the hell out of it. I actually think that Ben Rice is the best pure hitter on the team. Even more pure than Judge. Best pure hitter. You want to hang out a 240 average, you got to update that. Because you got to look at some other stuff that you're probably too lazy to look at. But I promise you, Ben Rice is going to be phenomenal. James in Middletown, they got that right. What's up, James?
Hey, BT, what's going on, my man?
Hey, man, how you doing today?
Good. Before I get to my point, just want to say, hey, I golfed a couple weeks ago, and they paired me up with Phil, your sales guy.
Oh, okay. You know Phil? Okay, where'd you guys play? Phil's a great dude. Where'd you guys play?
Yeah, we were down Central New Jersey. Great guy, had great things to say about you and Sal.
Yeah,
great
he's, dude. Thank you. Now, Phil's good dude. How's he swinging? Do I have a little ammo to make fun of him? Can he golf?
Yeah. No, he wasn't bad, man. I don't think you got anything on him from what I hear about your golf game. I think we're all in the same ballpark.
We all stink. The only difference is not everybody gets piped in the chest with a Francesca skull shot.
That's a fantastic story, by the way.
Oh, man.
Wow. Hey, real quick, man, you just kind of made my point with the Ben Rice thing. I know you don't want to have this conversation about money, but I think a lot of this has to do with money, man. That's where the grit comes from, right? Look at Ben Rice. He's competing for a spot. He's got incentive. Guy's out there gritting his teeth and getting it done. Like, even when we were kids, BT, like, these guys are getting paid up front for 10 years. Like, I'm not saying they don't care, but I'm saying maybe, you know, they're just – you know, they just don't feel it like they did. Well, remember, you were a kid, you played Little League, and like your coach would say, hey, guys, you win this game, we're going for pizza. Just something like that made you play a little harder, right?
Yeah, I mean, guys I was don't trying have to play that hard, anymore. I get, listen, incentive's a great thing. You know, Aaron Boone shouldn't say, hey, you know, Pizza Hut on me, let's go if we crank out 8 runs and avoid the sweep. I mean, the incentive should be personal pride.
Agreed, 100%. But you know what? I think a lot of these guys, like, let's just take Soto. I know it's a big example, but 15 years, $800 million, where's the incentive, man? What, imagine a baseball game where you're getting paid upon your performance today. Like, if innings pitched, pitchers getting paid on innings pitched. So like, you'd see a lot more strikes, man.
Incentivizing it, basically rewarding somebody for the job that they do rather than giving them long contracts and then getting it no matter if they do well or poor. Listen, James, I hear you, but it's never going to happen, so I just can't waste a ton of time on it. And you know what? It shouldn't happen, quite frankly. Like, the market for Juan Soto was the market for Juan Soto. And quite frankly, it was justified. Look at his age. He's 26. You heard me, he's 26. All right? Look at the uptick in Mets attendance. So even if you don't think Juan, and listen, the fact that he's hitting 249, whatever it is an issue. The fact that he's got some of the worst numbers, runners in scoring position, is an issue. But we also know that this isn't Juan Soto. Now, how does he, I don't know what he's going to look like in 5 or 10 years. Nobody does. But the Mets were willing to swallow that financial commitment. And this is something we've talked a lot about. And I agree. Because it was about more than just, hey, we've got a guy in the 2 or the 3 spot to make us better. That's the primary function of bringing in somebody like Juan Soto. The secondary and the residual benefit, and it's a big one, is suddenly instead of having 16,000 people in City or in Queens against the Rockies or the Cardinals, obviously Braves, Phillies, Yankees show up, Dodgers show up, Padres show up. But like, you know, the Marlins or even the Brewers, who are good but not a national team, or the Orioles in an interleague, like on a Tuesday night in September, instead of having 16,000, guess what? You're going to have 35,000 again, or maybe 40, because I think that's what the Mets have been averaging, 38, 39. They're going to, in all probability, shatter their all-time Citi Field attendance mark established in 09. And you're not doing that without Juan Soto. So, yes, the salary is exorbitant. Yes, for the year that he's had in certain regards, it's less than a Juan Soto season, but this is business. You might not want to hear it. You might not want to talk about it, but it's business. And right now, the Mets are a playoff team, even though they very well might get snuffed out in terms of divisional hopes these next couple of days against the, might not, but they could. I mean, the division, you know, I don't think they win the division. I don't think the Yankees win it, but I believe the Mets will be a playoff team like I believe the Yankees will be. So the revenue stream validates giving Soto all that money, whether you like it or I like it. And it doesn't bother me as much as it bothers you. Maybe I've just opened up that part of my brain where I'm like, yep, not going to happen. Now, I'll tell you what, it's not meaning it's not going to change. What does bother me is like some of the NBA contracts. You know, at least, you know, Soto's out there playing every day. Judge will play every day unless his body says, I just can't go. Like, you know, even Volpe plays every day, making $1 million a year until he gets benched. Rightfully so, he should sit down. But in the NBA, the maintenance days and like guys loafing up and down the court, like that's where it seems to bother me the most in the NBA. But no, somebody like, you know, Juan Soto and Judge and the Ohtanis, those guys making bank who are moving the needle from a merch perspective, from an attendance perspective, that's business. And you can fight back all you want, but you're not going to win that. You're just not. Let me get Dan in Toms River, BT and Sound on the Fan. What's up, Dan?
Hey, what's going on, BT? First of all, before I just start real quick, I just wanted to say thank you because you are like my kindred spirit as a disgusted Yankee fan. And I've even got to give Sal credit, even for being for a Mets guy. I think his Yankee takes are spot on. I am so disgusted with the Yankee organization and this just, I'm the smartest guy in the room and I'm smarter than you. The Yankee organization better be careful because what they're doing is they're taking dyed-in-the-wool Yankee fans like me, like you, and they are making them apathetic. I am so disgusted with the direction of this team the last 5-7 years and just the blasé, oh, well, it's all right in front of us. Don't worry about it. It's a crapshoot. It's this. It's that. Enough. Enough. All you have to do, in my humble opinion, is go back to Old Timers Day and listen to Posada. Listen to Willie Randolph.
Yep.
Listen to Joe Torre.
Yep.
And it's no wonder that those teams won and won consistently. And Torre wasn't even really that fired up. But his points were great. But all I had to do was just listen to him for about 2.5 minutes. And you get the idea that things are under control. And I don't get that feeling at all with that clown show manager they have right now with Aaron Boone. And I'm up to here with it. I don't know what to do. I've never felt this way about the Yankees in my life. But to say I am disgusted with the direction of that team would be a gross understatement, BT. I've had it. I'm like at my wit's end. I know I probably sound like a maniac, but I'm done. And I will not set, and I'm not making this up either, I will not set foot in that stadium and waste any more of my hard-earned money until changes are made. And, you know, I know they don't care about me or whatever, but I think you're starting to get Yankee fans, real Yankee fans like myself, like you, to their wit's end. And that's not good. They better be careful and they better wake up soon because it's just not good. What do you think? I mean, sorry.
Thank you very much. I don't know what happened with my mic there. There you go. I think you speak for a lot of Yankee fans. I think that's a good call there, Dan. I do. I think that you are in the neighborhood where most Yankee fans reside right now. You know, I really do. Listen, that guy, and you could just tell, massive Yankee fan, invested emotionally, financially. He is a step away. He said it. He used the word that I used. He's a step away from what I've always said is the most dangerous human emotion, apathy. At least if you're angry, you're angry at somebody, whether it's a relationship, you know, whether it's a team, if you're angry, that shows that you care. When you're apathetic, you are now emotionally disconnected. And when you are emotionally disconnected, usually, not always, but usually there's no coming back, at least not to the degree that you were at before you hit this apathetic level. Like, so what was it? 2003 was my first year on New York radio. It has never sounded like this. Even during a couple of those, lackluster years with Girardi, you know, it was still close enough to the run and the dynasty, you know, and the game hadn't fully changed yet. And it was like, oh, well, you know, this is unacceptable. There was anger. There was pushback. There was fight. There was force. You're starting to hear apathy trickle in. And that is not good. It's not good. Time for the meat of the order for the Yankees. Last night, they scratch out the win. As we did discuss, maybe in unconventional matter, the meat of the order didn't do a whole lot. Judges was 0-for-3, a couple of whiffs down to 324. That's sinking like a rock. There's no way he's healthy. It's not his fault. Ben Rice has been amazing. He had a rough night, 0-for-3. And then Bellinger was 0-for-4. So 2-3-4 was a combined 0-for-10? But then you got a couple of knocks there from Jazz Chisholm. Obviously, Goldschmidt had a pinch hit, base hit. And Stanton 2-for-3. That laser that Stanton had on the double, which was at 118. I just don't know how he does it. I don't know. How does somebody, think about this, like they gave the stat, since StatCast, Stanton has had, was it 90 or 100? In the neighborhood of that. Balls exceed 118 miles per hour exit velocity. Nobody has more than 30. Like, how can, I could see if you have 15 more, you know, 17 more. Imagine if this guy played all the time, he'd have 150 more. I don't know how a human being consistently hits the ball harder than anybody else in the world. I don't know. I don't know what he does so different. Like, I'm trying to look at it. I know he's strong. That obviously helps. And he's got great leg and blah, blah, blah. But it's not like he takes this crazy load and just sells out every pitch. Generally, it's almost like this truncated swing. It's just, it's really, it defines everything. And when he lasers one, that is just, that's crazy. All right, it's 12:30 on the button. Let's get back to the calls. 888-808-1019. Mitch in Fort Lee. What's up, Mitch? How you doing today, bud? Mitchell. All right, Mitch is not there. One of the rare times Mitch is not ready. Brian's in New York on the fan. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, buddy. What's going on?
Hey.
Listen, everybody's forgetting right now there's parity. I say again, parity in baseball at the present. Even the Dodgers is having a bad season.
Okay.
The Yankee Stadium sells out every game. Every team that comes to the Yankee Stadium plays above what the team is when they come against the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Even so, right now the Red Sox have beaten us 8 games out of how much they played.
9.
And still 0.5 of a game in front of us. When they play against the Nationals and the weaker teams,
yep,
they lose because they're not a better team than the Yankees. I mean, we have some flaws right now.
Mm-hmm.
Some flaws can be fixed. For one thing, Jazz Chisholm is an awesome second baseman. The thing is, what a lot of people don't like about Jazz is he doesn't look like he takes the game serious. But he loves the game. He plays with fun. He plays loose.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, he thinks he's a power hitter. He's not a power hitter, but how much home runs he has? 23?
I think he's 25 now. He's going to finish with 30. But hold on, Brian, hold on. So, one of the things you said at the start is, you know, there's always a lot of fans at Yankee Stadium implying that the opponents get up. Dude, come on. Because that was always the case where the old Yankee Stadium was packed and it was bigger, 50,000 plus. And you'd have these teams come in and the Yankees would mop them.
Yeah, but this is not the old Yankee Stadium.
No. It's not the old Yankees. That's the point. It's not the old Yankees. It's not about being up for the Yankees or the stadium, the ambiance in the stadium. It's that these Yankees have been built wrong for far too long. And that I will no longer raise my voice over because I've said it forever. I'm right. You know it. Maybe some of you were reluctant to embrace that, but now it's unavoidable. And many of you were with me. I'm not saying I was the first one to say it. But it's just, the foundation is cracked. The repercussions are essentially non-existent. The owner is just, you know, I don't know where he is. I don't know what Hal's doing. I'd like to see one shot of Hal in the booth, pissed off. Not in the booth, in the suite, pardon me. Just one. Just give me one visual, you know? I don't really even need you to tweet, you know, like Cohen does here and there. But if you're going to, you know, maybe you drop one now when things aren't so rosy. He just seems completely detached from this team. He really does. It's not a good look. How about Al and Howard Beach? What's up, Al?
BC, how the hell are you?
I'm good. What's going on, dude?
We had your partner at the Joe B. Live pod on Friday night. I'd love to get you there for one of these things.
He was telling me about it, Al. He was telling me about it when I was at his house on Saturday. He was there. He thought he was going for like 20 minutes. He wound up being there for 2 hours. You guys roped him in for a while with Joe.
Once they started going, I mean, John Harper was great as well.
Yeah.
Joe B's always fantastic. It's a lot of fun. It's a few laughs.
Joe's daughter had booked me to do that over at the Hackensack, or at the brewery, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
She booked me to do it a while ago, and something happened on my end, because I'm never one to just bounce on a commitment like that, certainly for work, and I had to cancel. I would definitely go and hang out with Joe, no question.
You'd enjoy it. You'd enjoy meeting some of the people, some of the calls. It's a lot of fun.
Yep.
But anyway, the reason why I'm calling you today, you know, with hard on the Yankees here, and all the subplots are all there, and they're all worth discussing. I have a little expression that I use with my friends, my Yankee cliques, that to keep the local flavor in there, I always tell them, if Volpe and Wells were as good as Ohapi and Neto, the Yankees would be far better off for 2025 and beyond.
I mean, how am I going to push back on that? You know, the player development is just, it's embarrassing, the results. You know, again, nothing else we have to yell about. It is what it's terrible.
And if you notice, Boone, in the last couple of post-game press conferences when the subject got to Grisham, he said twice, remember, he's a former first-round pick. So he's kind of saying that Volpe and Wells might take a little time to develop the way Grisham has.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's sending a subtle undertone there when he talks about Grisham, and he keeps reminding us that he's a former first-round pick, and it took him all the way till his free agent season to bust out.
Yeah, well, okay, I mean, what a coincidence there. I'm not saying that Grisham's playing solely for the motivation of money here, but I mean, a guy basically...
No, neither am I.
No, I know, but he's having a really good year, even though his defensive metrics are a little bit down, but he's having a really good year, and he's making $5 million, which is peanuts. He's in for a big payday, but the Yanks are nuts if they give him a big... Like, what are you going to give Grisham 3-4 years? I mean, come on. So even the good stuff, and this is part of the problem, like even a good story like Grisham, you can't really fully enjoy because he's a free agent. And again, we all know that, or at least strongly think that, probably shouldn't commit too much to Grisham. I wouldn't. Not if you think Spencer Jones can play. Not if you think that eventually Dominguez is the guy. You know, it's the Yankees player development. It's just, it is criminally bad. It's criminally bad. It's not like it's average. I'm talking about position players, not pitchers, which happens to be very good. Not like, man, you know, we wish they were a little bit better, but middle of the pack, it's criminally bad. It's terrible. I just don't get it. Like, they haven't developed a first baseman. If you want to count Ben Rice, I mean, but I've got to see if he can actually play. I love him as a hitter. I got to see if he can actually play first base before I say that that's a check in that box. But forget about Ben for a moment. They have not developed the first. When was the last time they developed the first baseman? Was it Luke Voit for a minute? And then he led the league in home runs during COVID, and then Lord knows what happened to him? Was it Mattingly? Because it wasn't Tino, who was traded for, and it wasn't Giambi, who was signed, and it wasn't Teixeira, who was signed, and it wasn't Rizzo, who was signed. Who the hell was it? Now, I understand that, you know, the game's changed a lot, so you're not necessarily maybe like the 70s or the 80s, like in the year, I guess that would have been, I might have this off, 80, I think it was 84, 85, whatever, because the Olympic team was 84, so maybe 84, when Will Clark was drafted second or third in Palmeiro later in the first round, the whole Mississippi State team. By the way, if you saw that 30 for 30 on ESPN, and you love college baseball, it's phenomenal. Imagine Will Clark with a Metal Easton back in the day. My goodness. But the point is, you don't draft first baseman that early anymore. But can he develop any? I really think that the last first baseman the Yankees developed was Mattingly. And when he first came up, he wasn't even playing first base. He was playing left field. It's like they stumbled on that. He was playing the outfield in the minors primarily. That's just one position. I mean, every year we're searching for a third baseman. Every year. McMahon's got to come here, try to save him. All the young kids who don't work out. A couple of young kids who are interesting, who we run off, you know, don't give enough rope to, or they get hurt. It's just ridiculous. It really is. Right now, back to football, though, as we get ready for the start of the season. It is almost upon us. And NFL legend Nick Mangold, on behalf of the new Old Spice NFL collection available now at Walmart. You may not play in the NFL, but you can smell like you do. 7 Pro Bowls, two All-Pros. And let's face it, when Nick was in the trenches with his buddy Brick and some others, it was just a more stable Jet team, and we loved it. And we miss it, and hopefully Glenn's going to bring it back. Nick, it's BT and Sal. Sal is off today, though, but welcome to the show. What's going on, buddy? How you been?
Good. How you doing? I love that intro song.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I mean, we got to play good tunes for you, Nick. We got to make you feel at home, we got to make Aaron Glenn feel at home, because the biggest problem, Nick, listen, obviously there's been a dearth of talent. I mean, you're not bad this long without, if you have great players. I just feel like there's been an absence of leadership. There's been an absence of direction. And there's been an absence of accountability as well. And, I joke around. I say, AG ain't playing. I mean, Aaron Glenn is giving off every vibe that he is ready and he is absolutely in charge. What are you seeing? What did you see in camp? And do you agree with what I said about Glenn so far?
Yeah, it seems like he's definitely taking charge and putting his stamp on the team. I look at this team and the struggles that we've had over the past several years, and unfortunately, I think what we've been hurting is our drafting and our team longevity of players. We have guys that are coming in for 2-3 years and then out, and it's tough to build a roster that way when you don't have mainstays that are able to stick around and kind of take the leadership that comes from the head and disperse it from the team, because the coach can only lead you so far. It's up to the team, the players in that locker room, to really come together and be the direction that you want to see the team go. So not having, your mid-level 8-, 9-, 10-year vets that have been with the team their whole career, know the ins and outs of New York, how to manage the media, the fans' expectations, is kind of a big deal. And I think that gets overshadowed when we talk about different coaches coming through. And it seems right now that Coach Glenn seems to be really emphasizing that fact that, hey, listen, this team's only going to go, I can lead you, but the team's only going to go as far as the players on this team take us.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And by the way, to your point, Nick, the absence of players, now it's changed a little bit here. Garrett just got paid and Sauce got paid. Obviously Q, but for years, it's like you basically had nobody on a second contract. So I don't know how you establish culture, a winning continuity when there's a constant revolving door. And, the next phase is to, I would think, and if you disagree, tell me, you got to just start by cleaning things up, and that's the penalties. And I've always been curious, like, from a penalty perspective, when you're always penalized, and they always are among the top of the NFL, is it a lack of recognition or intelligence or a selfishness, or why all the penalties? What does that mean when you're always penalized a ton?
I think we had an old running back coach. He had a saying, you got to sweep the corners. And when you're cleaning up, mom asks you to sweep the kitchen, and you do it, but you miss the corners. You miss the details.
Yeah.
And that's where the penalties come from. Like, the details, the devil's in the details. And so, if you're looking at the big picture and say, hey, listen, I just know I have to block this defensive tackle down to this Mike linebacker, and I'm not going to pay attention to anything else, and you miss, the snap count or something, you're not fully invested in what you're doing to the best of your ability. So I think the penalties show that it's a lack of effort into the details that hurts the team.
So, Nick, how do we measure progress this year? From your perspective, how do we do that?
That's a great question. I think that's an ownership question. For me, as a former player, I want to see strong, competitive football where, we are making a push. We're playing sound Jet football. It looks like we're built to run the ball very well and pass when we need to. And I want to see that happen. It's anybody can sling the ball around and come up with different game plans and everything. But when it's time to go and it's 3rd and 1 and everyone in the building knows what you're doing, and you go out there and do it, that's what I want to see. And so that mentality that, that they're going to go out and impose their will is, I think, the biggest thing to see that culture shift, say, hey, this is how we're going to do it, and we're going to do it this way.
And, listen, Nick, they have the horses to do it. That's the best part. because anybody can identify, and I've said this basically for 4 months now, Jets are going to look to run it 30-plus times a week. We've seen that in the summer. It's so identifiable, whether it's their draft choices up front, the running back stable. But here's what's going to happen at some point. They're going to fall behind 17-3, pick six, fumble, whatever. And at some point, they're not going to be able to run the way they want to because they got to try to move the ball a little bit quicker. When that happens, where are we?
That, Ben, is when you got to rely on your playmakers to make plays. And, you know, you pay a bunch of money to the wide receivers to make plays and your quarterback to make plays. They got to go out there and do that. So while me personally, you know, offensive lineman, I want to run the ball every chance I get. But when their number gets called, they gotta make the plays they need to. You expect them to do it. So I think that they will. I hope that they will. And I think that's going to show the success or failure of what the season's going to be.
Well, I mean, all right, that sounds good. You hope that they will. So do I. You think that they will. I'm a little less convinced with throwing the football. You know, it's, to me, like, Garrett Wilson's amazing. The man needs some help. I mean, their wide receiving core is awful. And until I do think there's some problems at tight end with Mason Taylor, but you got to get another receiver here. And I think that Justin Fields is probably a little bit better than some people are saying throwing the ball, because you could throw to a space and have some gash plays. But I'm sorry, like I can't dump this on Garrett Wilson if they're not throwing the ball. I don't know if it's his fault. Is one man out there, like, he's going to be double teamed every snap.
This is true, and you know, you look at he will be covered, and you know, especially when you put a high price tag on him, you know, bells and whistles are going to go off. But I think when you look at it, you know, quarterbacks take different time to develop, and you look at Geno Smith, his time with us did not go so well, but resurrected his career later on, and is able to really do well out in Seattle and move the ball around. So you know, things, and so I'm not putting Justin Fields into a basket if he can't throw yet. I'm waiting to see, you know, yep, development, how things go, and hope for the best. Because, you know, right now, everyone's starting off 0-0. And what we have hope.
That's fair. I mean, without hope, we got nothing. Talking to Nick Mang, that's all we've had is hope. I mean, and nothing tangible. So hopefully it's about to change. Nick is with us, of course, 11 years with the Jets. Great player. Pro Bowl 7, 2 All-Pro. We miss him up there as, moving bodies and just being a beast like he was. So, to me, the Jet fan right now is in an interesting place. There, it's between hope and a little bit of conviction, because this is not a roster without talent. The defense, certainly the front seven, could be good. Special teams should be better. We know they got a running back stable. They got a star wideout. They got a stud corner, and they got new hope at the coaching perspective. Do you when you look as a player, I want to take it back. When you were a player, did you look at the start of the schedule? Were you like, all right, we have a chance to get off and maybe bag a couple of wins and get this going, or did you not do? Because we do that. Did you do that?
As a player, you go in thinking every year you're going to win a Super Bowl, no matter who's on that roster. You know, when you're done playing, you look back and you're like, oh man, that was not good. But as a player, if you don't have the mindset going into a season that you're going to go 16-0 and win a Super Bowl, you don't deserve to be on that field. So if anybody has a mindset out there that they're like, oh, well, you know, we hope that we're going to be okay, we knock off a couple, they don't deserve to be on that field.
You think Buffalo is still what they were? Like Miami, like the division, to me, again, Buffalo's the team to beat. But the other two teams, you know, I know the Pats. The Pats got Vrabel, stud. Miami's got talent, but I think they're a mess. Like, is it nuts to think the Jets can make a run and be the second best team in this division?
It definitely can. I mean, had the opportunity. Buffalo is going to be a tough pass to get past, especially, you know, with their quarterback that they have there, and the home field opportunities that they have up in Buffalo. But you know, I'm hoping they're battling for it. Because it's been a long time. You know, we've gone from New England controlling the division to now Buffalo controlling the division. I'm looking forward to our time controlling the division.
Let's go. I mean, it's fun. I mean, listen, dude, longest playoff drought, North American team sports. I mean, Yankee fans think we have it rough now. Jet fan has been beaten to a bloody pulp. So hopefully the renaissance is, the early stages is here. I think they got the right coach, and we'll see. And by the way, Nick, before I let you go, I'm an Old Spice guy. I know you're doing stuff with them. What exactly do you have going on?
Yeah, great. We spent time today up in Bergen County, New Jersey. surprising fans with Old Spice, their new collection in conjunction with Walmart. And we were with Bill today, who does great work with Big Brothers and Big Sisters, mentoring the little kids. So it was great to surprise him, big Jets fan. You know, it's always fun to be able to do these things where, you know, you get the unsuspecting fan and you get to be able to reward them for the efforts that they go unnoticed by most people in their community. So it was really exciting. I'm glad for Old Spice and the opportunity to do that. Get this new NFL product out to him.
Sounds good. Like I said, I'm an Old Spice guy, too. The deodorant's awesome. I'm an Old Spice deodorant guy. So, Nick, to better...
Same here for years.
Yeah, there you go. Old school trench. If you can wear it in the trenches, man, I can wear it with a suit. So, I love it. 11 years with the Jets, and hopefully this is going to start getting a little bit better. Thanks for popping on. Appreciate it, buddy.
Of course. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. There you go. NFL legend, of course, Nick Mangold joins us and was with us on behalf of the new Old Spice NFL collection at Walmart now. You may not play in the NFL, but you could smell like you do. Yeah, I remember one of the first visuals I have of my grandfather on my Italian side, on my mom's side. He would wake up to get the gravy going on Sunday morning. I mean, with the birds were chirping. Papa was up there, you know, stirred away. And he would, before he'd start stirring away, he'd be in the mirror. I could still see it like it, not a gray hair. I mean, even in his mid-70s, not a gray hair. Just slicking his hair back with his gold chain and his gold cross and the white, you know, little T-shirt and shaving and the old spice smell. Like, that, I'm talking about when I was a kid. And I still love it. I'm an Old Spice guy. I used to get my dad soap on a rope. I don't know if you do you remember that, Hob? You just looked at I would get him. I had no money. My mom would obviously pay for it and stuff. But we would get him soap on a rope, and it would hang from the shower. And you just see it get smaller and smaller. And eventually the rope would detach from the soap. But, I mean, it smelled great, and you'd have it for a couple of weeks. So there you go. Massive Old Spice fan. Big Nick Mangold fan as well. Oh, come on, Jets, dude. Like, I just, you know, I've been very optimistic. You know that? In terms of progress. And I'm standing by it. I think it's just going to be more rewarding. I think it's going to be more buttoned up. Maybe not right away. Eventually, those penalties and that nonsense are going to evaporate, and AG's going to be in charge. And if you don't follow AG, he's going to basically punch you out the door. That's it. It's going to be his way. We got an adult coach in the team, finally.